longer. This is VOA 1, The Hits. You know I'm right.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Jill Robbins, Gregory Stockel, Dan Novak, and Dan Friedel. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Jill Robbins.
It is rare to see a big winter fire in Colorado, like the one that burned 24 square kilometers of land and homes outside the city of Denver last week. Usually, the ground is covered with snow in December. However, scientists say a long dry period in the state helped the fire move quickly. Some say winter fires will become more common because of a changing climate. The fire is being called the Marshall Fire because it started near Marshall Road near Boulder, Colorado. Local newspapers say, as of Sunday, two people were missing and seven were injured. Nearly 1,000 homes burned and over 100 were damaged. The fires are becoming more dangerous as homes are built in areas that once were farms or rural areas. Jonathan Overpeck is a professor who studies the environment at the University of Michigan. He said, winter fires like the Marshall Fire are not common. He said, things are going to get worse unless we stop climate change. Tens of thousands of people were told to leave the area northwest of Denver when the fire spread quickly last Thursday. Strong winds of over 160 kilometers per hour pushed the flames. Susie Pringle lives in the area. She said she was in a food store, walked out, and had to get in her car and make a dash for her life as the smoke and flames came close. Keith Musselman studies snow and water in nearby Boulder, Colorado. He said, if snow had been on the ground, as it often is in December, the fire would not have spread. Jennifer Balch is a fire scientist at the University of Colorado in Boulder. She said the dry ground, warm weather, an ignition source, and the strong wind created a disaster. Balch said a wet spring caused wild grass to grow tall, while the dry summer and autumn made it burn easily. She added that the time for fire danger in Colorado is now longer than in the past because of climate change. In addition, the area northwest of Denver has many more homes today than in the past. Thousands of new houses have been built since the 1990s in the area from Denver to Fort Collins, a distance of about 100 kilometers. Balch said the homes can catch on fire and people can get hurt more easily. In her explanation, Balch said that there are many more people in the area than before. A recent study by the University of Colorado showed that 97% of wildfires were started by people. She said people need to start thinking about how their daily activities can start a fire. And now that people are living in areas that used to be rural, she said, big fires like the Marshall Fire are going to be more common. It's just a matter of time before we have whole towns burning down, like we had in California, and events like this in Colorado. I'm Jill Robbins.
American government and non-governmental groups are working to settle almost 100,000 Afghans in the United States by next September. The effort supports the Biden administration's Operation Allies Welcome Plan, created to help Afghans who fled their country when the Taliban seized control of the government in August. The U.S. and allied military forces had just withdrawn from Afghanistan after 20 years of war there. The U.S. Department of State says that almost 48,000 Afghan refugees have already moved off U.S. military bases since summer. They are settled in communities across the U.S. Krish Omara Vignaraja is president of Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service, one of nine national resettlement agencies. She said the community reaction has been large and good. We know that resettlement isn't a weeks-long or months-long process. Success requires years of effort, and so that's where it's really important to have strong community ties, Vignaraja said. The nonprofit, which operates in around half of U.S. states, has resettled roughly 6,000 newly arrived Afghans since the summer. In San Jose, California, the TB and Refugee Clinic at Santa Clara Valley Medical Center is providing health checks for Afghans in that area. But the center needs additional employees to deal with the 800 refugees expected in the area through September 2022. Nelda David is the health center's administrator. She said the center cleared only about 100 refugees in the last financial year. It does not know when these new refugees will arrive. Most of the employees are immigrants or former refugees themselves. They understand the difficulties of starting over in a new country. David said the lack of employees will not stop them from welcoming the refugees. I'm Gregory Stockel.
A movie about a mass killing in Bosnia was shown for the first time publicly in Serbia Tuesday. More than 1,000 people watched Quo Vadis Aida over two showings in the town of Novi Pazar. The movie is about the Srebrenica massacre, in which Bosnian Serb fighters killed 8,000 Muslims in Srebrenica in 1995. Hussein Memic is the director of a cultural center which showed the movie. The tickets sold out in an hour and a half, he said. We are appealing for the film to be screened across Serbia. It's absolutely senseless for it to play only in Novi Pazar. The two showings were the first time the movie was shown in any part of Serbia. Novi Pazar is a largely Muslim town. Quo Vadis Aida was named Best Film in the 2021 European Film Awards. It was nominated for Best Foreign Film at the 2021 Oscars. It tells the story of a woman, Aida, who is a translator for the United Nations in the small town of Srebrenica. When the Serbian army takes over the town, her family is among the thousands looking for refuge at the UN camp. Aida is played by the Serbian actress Jasna Duricic. She was a member of the Serbian National Theater from 1990 until 2005. The European Film Awards named her Best Actress for her performance. Jasmila Zabanić's movie has never been shown publicly in Bosnia and Herzegovina's autonomous Serb Republic, which is where Srebrenica is located. The Serb Republic opposes a Bosnian law which makes it illegal to deny that the Srebrenica massacre was genocide. Two important Bosnian Serb leaders, including former General Ratko Mladic, were found guilty of genocide by the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia for their actions in the Srebrenica massacre. Mladic was sentenced to life in prison. Zabanić said many theaters in other parts of Serbia and in Bosnia's Serb Republic had wanted to show the movie, but there were fears of retaliation. Boris Isaković plays a main character in the movie. It is clear that the showing of this film has been censored, Isaković said. But that says a lot about the power of film, that it is a powerful weapon through which stories can be told. I'm Dan Novak.
Do you want to grow plants inside during the cold weather? If so, you may want to consider some plants that can flavor your food and make your home smell nice at the same time. We are talking about the herbs, rosemary and bay laurel. Both plants do well inside, near a sunny window, in the cold weather, as long as the temperature is warm and you keep them watered. Both rosemary and bay laurel come from the part of the world near the Mediterranean Sea. The area is cool but not icy during winter, and it gets lots of sunlight. Gardening expert Lee Reich of the Associated Press says it is important to keep these plants happy and alive in the cooler months. So how do you do it? For rosemary, water level is very important. The plant needs soil that is a little bit wet all the time, but never soaked. Too much water will kill the plant. You can plant rosemary in a container with soil that is about 25% sand, perlite, or vermiculite. Perlite and vermiculite help soil hold water. Rosemary can add a nice taste to food, but it also can make a room smell good. So if you have it growing inside, it is a good idea to place the container near an airflow source, like a door that is used often. That way, the pleasant smell of rosemary floats through the air. Bay laurel has dark green leaves and produces a nice smell when picked. When added to food, Reich notes, It makes soups and tomato sauces taste better. You need to crush the leaves after you pick them to release the flavor. If you want to grow the plants inside to make your home look good, you can cut unwanted branches from the plant as it grows and make it look like a small tree. You will not hurt the plant if you do this. Most plants that grow this way get a little bit taller than 65 centimeters. Rosemary and bay laurel can live for more than 10 years if they are cared for. Every 2 years, it is a good idea to replace the soil and add the plant to a larger container. You can move them outside when the weather gets warm. The plants will like the change. And you can welcome the rosemary and bay laurel back into your home for many winters to come. I'm Dan Friedel.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. During the second half of the 19th century, the United States was not concerned much with events in other countries. It was too busy dealing with events inside its own borders. At that time, the nation was recovering from the Civil War. It was expanding to the West, and it was developing industries. As production increased, the United States began trading more and more with other countries. At the same time, it needed a new foreign policy to defend its interests. Morris Joyce and Larry West discuss America's foreign policy in the late 1800s.
A growing number of lawmakers called for a new foreign policy. One was Henry Cabot Lodge of Massachusetts. Lodge said, "The great nations of the world were taking control of the world's undeveloped areas." As one of the great nations, Lodge said, "The United States must not fall out of this line of march." Another lawmaker said, "Fate has written our policy. The trade of the world must and shall be ours." Some of these ideas came from the writings of Captain Alfred Mahan. He was head of America's Naval War College. Mahan wrote that all the great nations in history had possessed great sea power. He said the United States must build up its sea power, too, if it wanted to be a great nation. Sea power, Mahan said, was more than a strong navy. It was an economy that could produce goods for export. It was trade ships that could carry the goods. It was colonies that could supply raw materials and markets. And it was overseas naval bases that could defend American interests far from home.
The Washington Post newspaper described America's growing power this way: "A new understanding seems to have come upon us. An understanding of our strength, and with it, a new feeling. We want to show our strength. We are face to face with a strange fate. The taste of empire is in the mouth of the people." The Washington Post was not speaking for everyone, of course. In fact, many American presidents of the late 1800s did not have this taste for empire. Yet, they were forced to face the future. Changes were coming. and it was their responsibility to guide the nation through the changes. For this reason, the United States entered into several agreements with foreign lands during the late 1800s.
In 1878, for example, the United States signed a treaty with Samoa. The United States agreed to help the South Pacific Islands settle any differences with other nations. A few years later, the treaty was put to a test. A group of Germans living in Samoa forced the island's ruler from power. They replaced him with a ruler who was more friendly to Germany. For a time, it seemed the United States and Germany would go to war. But when American warships arrived in Samoa, so did a big storm. The storm smashed both American and German ships. Neither side was left with a force strong enough to fight. In 1889, the United States, Germany, and Britain agreed that Samoa should be an independent kingdom. For 10 years, local leaders attempted to establish a strong government. Their efforts failed. In 1899, Germany took control of Samoa's large western islands. The United States took control of the smaller islands to the east.
Events in another group of Pacific Ocean islands affected American foreign policy in the late 1800s. These were the Hawaiian Islands. Hawaii was an important port for American trade ships sailing between the United States and China. Good relations between Hawaii and the United States were necessary to keep the port open to American ships. In 1891, Liliuokalani became Queen of Hawaii. She was not friendly to the United States. A group of American businessmen and planters in Hawaii plotted to oust her. The group started an uprising. Then it called on the United States for protection. Queen Liliuokalani was forced to surrender. The businessmen and planters formed a new government. They wanted Hawaii to be part of the United States. By the end of the century, Congress had made Hawaii an American territory.
The United States also offered to serve as a negotiator in several international disputes during the late 1800s. One dispute involved Britain and Venezuela. Both countries claimed land that bordered the British colony of Guyana on the northeast coast of South America. The situation became tense when gold was discovered in the disputed area. The United States offered to negotiate an agreement. Britain refused the offer. The United States offered again. Britain refused again. Finally, President Grover Cleveland asked the United States Congress to appoint a committee to decide the border. Before the American committee had a chance to meet, Britain and Venezuela agreed to let an international committee decide.
In 1895, Cuban rebels revolted against the colonial government. They tried to destroy the economy of the island by burning private property. Spain sent a large force to Cuba to crush the revolt. Thousands of persons were arrested and put into prison camps. Many died of hunger and disease. Spain was denounced for its cruelty.
It was difficult to get a true picture of what was happening in Cuba. American newspapers sent reporters to the island. But much of what they wrote about never happened. The reporters knew very well that exciting and horrifying stories sold newspapers. So they made up stories about bloody battles and Spanish cruelty. One incident has become famous in American newspaper history. Publisher William Randolph Hearst sent artist Frederick Remington to Cuba to paint pictures of the fighting. Remington spent several months in Havana. He saw no fighting. He sent Hearst a message. "Things were quiet," Remington said. "There would be no war." Hearst sent back this answer: "You supply the pictures. I'll supply the war."
The newspaper built up strong public feeling against Spain. Soon, many Americans were calling for war to free Cuba from Spanish rule. William McKinley was president. He did not want the United States to become involved. He did, however, offer to help Spain find a solution that would return peace to the island. Spain refused the offer. It attempted to improve the situation in Cuba by itself. Spain called home the military commander accused of cruelty. It stopped putting people in prison camps. It offered equal political rights to all Cubans, and it promised them self-rule in the future.
President McKinley welcomed Spain's policy statements. He felt Spain should be left alone to honor its promises to the Cuban people. He said the United States would not interfere. At about that time, however, riots broke out in Havana. President McKinley said it was his responsibility to protect the lives and property of Americans living there. So he sent the battleship Maine to Havana. During the early weeks of 1898, President McKinley waited for Spain to act on its promises to Cuba. He saw little progress. Relations between the United States and Spain became tense. Then, on the night of February 15th, a powerful explosion shook the battleship Maine in Havana Harbor. The ship sank. More than 250 American sailors were dead.
No one knew what caused the explosion on the battleship Maine. The United States said it was an underwater bomb. Spain said it was something on the ship itself. There was some evidence the explosion was caused by an accident in the ship's fuel tanks. Yet, some people in the United States blamed Spain anyway. They demanded war. They cried, "Remember the Maine!"
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.